Okay, everybody, let's get started. My name is David Perry, and I'd like to welcome you to PubCalendar 2014. I'm a principal software engineer in progress, and less than 20 years ago, I've been with the company 20 years, but back in the late 90s, I was part of the team that delivered up the original OpenEdge app server in version 9. And today I'd like to talk to you about a new product that we're working on that I like to call a reimagining of that app server. Progress-specific application server for OpenEdge. So the one thing I can tell you is that this product is not coming out in 11.4. So this disclaimer actually means more than most of the disclaimers you usually see in these talks, because we're not coming out in the next release of Progress. We'll be coming out sometime after that. But anything can change between now and then. So what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to give you a brief introduction to what the Pacific Application Center for OpenEdge is. I'm going to drill down into the architecture of it, and I'm going to finish up with some of the with the benchmark results of what we're seeing with this new architecture. I'm going to ask that you hold all questions until I ask for them, because a lot of this talk may be the things we'll be getting to type of questions. So I'll ask you to hold those. So first, what is PASOE? Well, it starts off with what we call the Pacific Application Server Platform. And what this is, it's a version of Tomcat that we've downloaded and configured for production use. By production use, that means when you normally go to Apache and download Tomcat, you start it up and you hit the root URL, you'll see a nice pretty home page, you'll see links to manager applications and stuff like that. All stuff that's great for a development application server, but not for production. So for production, what we did, we removed the Tomcat's default root application, replaced it with an application that does absolutely nothing, because Tomcat does require a root application. We uninstalled the Tomcat Manager applications. We did provide them for you, but it's up to you whether you install them. We turned off auto-deployment. And by that, auto-deployment is when you drop a WAR file into your web apps directory. If auto-deployment is turned on, Tomcat will expand it and start it up and make it ready for use. We've also disabled the shutdown port on Unix by default. The shutdown port is a port that's opened up where you can tell Tomcat, okay, I'm done, shut down. You can re-enable it. On Windows, that's not an option because Windows doesn't support signals, so it requires a shutdown port. We do support JMX in this new app server, but it's not turned on by default. Again, that's something you can turn on. And we also enabled the web crawling filter to help alleviate traffic from web crawlers. Since this is our platform that we're building on, we've added the Spring Security Framework to the basic Tomcat install. If you use the REST adapter recently, Spring Security is built into that and is tied into what we're doing moving forward as far as providing security. We've also defined some realms and roles for use in here to implement access control. One of the big benefits that we've done, we've worked really hard on this, is we created a command line tool called PCMan, which allows you to do many, many things to configure, start, and manage Tomcat. And finally, future versions of role-based and QuarterCon will be shipping with this as their default Tomcat server. QuarterCon currently doesn't ship to Tomcat, they will, and Rollbase will be replacing the version they ship with our version. Right now we're using the 7.0.42 distribution of Tomcat. That may change when we ship, it may not change. It depends on if there's a reason to. But we've been running on this for quite a while and it's been working well. So, now we have our Pacific application platform. Now we're gonna have the OpenEdge special sauce to it. And we refer to this as PASOE, as the acronym. Originally, we called it the Next Generation App Server, NXGAS, but marketing didn't want to go out with the product called NXGAS. So why are we doing this? Well, with the cloud and with the whole Amazon EC2 and REST HTTP-type applications, we needed something that can work in a both on-premise and off-premise hosted type environment, and this does both well. We re-architected and re-implemented our entire app server stack. We removed a lot of code that for instance, Tomcat manages as far as and the connections coming in. It runs in the PaaS platform. We simplified the whole architecture. Instead of having a bunch of different components that you need to configure and install, such as the web service adapter, REST adapter, AIA, they all come already pre-configured and ready to run. Security is built in with Sprint Security. And we provide both JMX teams for managing this, as well as an open REST API that's optional should you install our manager API. It'll be shipping as two products. The development version will be limited by either sessions or connections. We're under discussion with that. Production version has no limits at all. So if we want to look at some comparisons and contrasts between PaaS OE and the current app server, is one of the biggest benefits is that we no longer enforce a session model on the app server itself. A running app server, PaaS OE app server, can support both session models, both stateful and stateless. Whereas with the classic app server, you specify that application model and all your clients have to conform to that. So for instance, say you had an ADL application that used a session managed app server, and you wanted to create a REST API for that. Well, REST only supports state-free, so that means you would have to create a whole new app server configuration along with its ProPath and whatnot. With the new PaaS OE, you just deploy the REST service PAR file, and you're good to go. We integrated our adapters. They're all part of the same web application. With the legacy app server, we didn't really provide them as WAR files, but we provided them as servlets that you would have to copy over into your Tomcat installation. We configure that way. They're already integrated and they're all set up to go. And again, that's talking about the single web application versus multiple web applications. If you're running AIA, REST, and WSA, those are all in the traditional app server, different web applications, so that you can consume a little more resource just when they have to. And they also have multiple configuration models you have to worry about. We've replaced our unified broker process, which is a Java process that was the heart of our legacy app server, with a much lighter weight session manager that runs in Tomcat itself. So by virtue of that, we've eliminated network hop when using one of our adapters. Instead of doing that inter-process communication between Tomcat and our unified broker, it's just an in-memory process there. And then it uses the network hop to get to the agent, which is the same. Finally, the big thing here is our multi-session agent. With the legacy app server, each agent process runs a single session. Depending on the type of configuration you have, it can be session free and run multiple sessions at one at a time, or it would be one agent process tied to a particular client. With our new multi-session agent, you've got a single agent process that runs both state-free and stateless sessions. And I use the term state-free, stateless, session-managed, session-free, just because they're in the vocabulary and I just use them as euphemisms. But basically, we have stateless and we have stateful. And I'm going to try to use those terms, but because of all the history of our app server, there's many different names for the same thing. So let's drill down into the architecture for a little bit. So let's some of the acronyms that I've been using, let's define them. So when I say PaaS, PaaS is the Pacific Application Server Platform, and that's just the base Tomcat install. You can install your own web applications into it, you can install OE into it, or Corticon or Rollbase. ADL PaaS is the open edge version of that, and that includes our OEADL.WAR file, which is all our Java code that gets deployed into the Tomcat instance. And it's a collection of Java web applications, includes all our adapters, includes the session manager I talked about, and includes common services for logging and property management and all the other things that our agent includes. It uses the multi-session agent, and we do allow you to have, you can install our optional manager application in order to enable remote management through REST APIs. And for instance, say if you purchased Corticon and were using that with our Pacific Application Platform, you can install OpenEdge into that instance directly. So PaaS OE is the PaaS platform installed with the ADL PaaS services. And it's up to you how you want to deploy your applications to your customers. There are a number of options that I'll be getting into in a future slide. So let's look at old app server, and this is sort of a memory lane for me. Back in the late 90s, I was part of the team that delivered this, the original app server. Next, we worked on AIA, a way to use our what we call the web client and to tunnel that app server protocol over HTTP and over the internet. Next, we added our WSA adapter to support SOAP. And finally, after I was involved in many years of Sonic and National stuff, Divergence, I got back to the main app server, and we did the REST adapter, which is the latest adapter we delivered in the OpenEdge 11 timeframe. So, with our new app server, we start with our Pacific Application Server platform, and we have our web application that includes our adapters. We then have our multi-session agent that's connected to, connected to the database. ADL applications, they are the same. They're defined by ProPath, how they find them. We support a console admin UI. That's the TC man to man. Allows you to start, stop, deploy, configure, do lots of different things. And if you compare the number of lines of boxes, you see that it's much simplified. And the big network hop that we eliminate right here is between what was Tomcat, or back in the 90s it was JRun, if you remember that, and the UBroker. And right now it's all a single process here, eliminating that network hop. So if you're dealing with big payloads, that can save a lot of time. So we look at the ecosystem this is where I want to ask the questions. So, can anyone tell me what is missing from this picture? And there are two answers, both are right, but I'm only looking for one. Yes?
Clients.
What?
The clients.
Okay, well, clients are all in the cloud here. That's not the right answer. You're the ones I'm looking for. Yes. But it's almost right.
GUI
yes.
Clients.
ADL GUI clients, yes. Okay, that is the answer I'm looking at. The progress kernel is in this MS agent. Again, this box here is in a process box.
Okay. So are there multiple progress kernels?
Yes and no. Because we're multi-session, and we've configured a single agent process with hundreds of sessions, you can run a single agent process. However, you have full control over running multiple agent processes if you want to limit them. Correct answer.
That single agent would scale to how many agents?
I've got a slide that you'll be quite impressed with at the end that shows how good we scale in this new architecture. The answer I was looking for is there's no native connection into the app server with PaaS OE. Everything has to go through. So through Tomcat and our adapters, which means that if you're using a GUI client or a Bash client or what have you, you'll be connecting over HTTP, just like you would be with AIA. Because we've optimized everything here, though, we're finding that we're actually running a little faster than a direct connect into the app server. We have done a prototype of a native connector that's running inside Tomcat, but it's opening up a socket out the side, and it'll eliminate the whole security stack and everything up front. It's not a great way to go. If we have a lot of customer demand, that's one way to approach it. Another way that we may think about if we have customer demand for this feature is using HTML5 WebSockets to allow us to get the functionality we need, but not bypass all the security stuff that we have. So we go, let's look at the ecosystem. We have our Pacific application server, our services, those can be, you know, REST or SOAP or AIA, ADL services. We have our ADL application. We have our optional Open Edge Manager, and if you install this, then you can remotely manage it through OEM or Open Edge Explorer, which is shown here. Now, we typically don't need an app. We don't need an admin server with our new app server to start it or stop it. It has nothing to do with the admin server. You do need the admin service, though, if you want to use OEM to manage it. And then Progress Developer Studio will also look into the admin service in order to deploy and run. Again, because this is just a standard Tomcat container, you can install other web applications into it, such as Porticon, Rollbase, or anything you create yourself. So, drilling down to the web services, we've got our OEADL more, which is the meat and potatoes of what's running inside Tomcat. It includes Spring Security and our network transports. We have our common services, administration, metrics. We've greatly improved the amount of information we'll give you as far as metrics go to see what's going on in the server. Logging and property support. Our ADL Session Manager is what replaces our eBroker process with a much lighter weight in JVM support. Our eBroker process was basically had two ends, a front end that managed client connections in the back end and the server connections. Because we're running in Tomcat, Tomcat already has all that support with the client stuff. It's got worker threads, it does all that for you. So with the legacy app server having Tomcat in front of our unified broker, it was just really doing extra work that didn't need to be done. But we've gotten rid of that with that session manager. Then we have our MS agent, our multi-session agent, and it could be one or more processes there. Finally, if you install oemanager.war, it'll have its own URL when you install it. It has its own Spring Security stack, which is locked down to only allow administrators or operators, one of the roles that we define. It also includes a REST API, so if you wanted to use third-party tools or create your own tools to manage and configure this, you can do it that way. That REST API will be published. Finally, we do use JMX. All the metrics and admin stuff are done through JMX feeds. So using JConsole, you can look at them, or you can use one of the other tools for remotely managing through JMX, such as NIOS. So, the application architecture models have been simplified. With the legacy app server, we had session manage, which consists of state reset, state aware, and stateless. They all bound a client to a particular agent, depending on the mode you had, depending on how the agent process activated. With the new one, we only have stateless and stateful, and that's completely controlled by the client. When you're connecting to this, you'll be passing in a URL such as HTTP from an ADL client, and you'll either say session managed or session free, and that'll determine whether you get a session that's bound to your client or whether you're going to use something from the free session pool. So when you're operating stateless, it's equivalent to state free. The client can execute concurrent ADL requests. It requires one per server connection. On the back end, and I'll talk about this in a slide coming up, you can control the number of connections as well as sessions in the agent. And the client user and ADL application context is managed entirely by your application. You're responsible for the context. Nothing sticks around. You're not going to get the same session on the second request that you've got on the first request. With the stateful model, it's sticky ADL sessions. When you go to connect, you'll get a session allocated to your client, and that session will be hanging around for you. So anything you do in that session will remain request after request. So the client context is stored in the ADL session between your requests. And if you do multiple multiple operations, they will be pipelined to that particular session. You won't get any concurrent operation. So we had to rework our app server event procedures. In the legacy app server, they have a prefix, SRVR, stands for server, but it really doesn't give the true meaning of what we're doing here. So the first thing we had to do is we needed to create a new one called Agent Startup Proc and Agent Shutdown Proc. And this gets run once when an agent process is started up. It's similar to what you would have done in the whole server startup or server shutdown in the legacy app server, except that this will happen once and many, many sessions will go through it. We then created our session startup and session shutdown, and these will execute when you create a new session, either stateless or So when it starts, a session, it'll start up. Right. If your session connect and session disconnect only get run at for stateful clients, but that's where you can do your authentication there. Not for stateless, no. Because it's only session managed for that. However, we do have a session activate and session deactivate, which for a state-free app server is where you would have done your authentication stuff. One difference that we did do there, though, was in the legacy app server, those events only happen for state-free. However, in this one, it'll happen for both stateful and stateless just because we wanted to. It didn't make sense to not do it when it's the same agent process. So for state aware applications, you'll also get the session activate and session deactivate should you want them for that case. You may not, chances are you're not going to use them, but they will be there and available to be called. So let's look at the architecture a little bit. So there's our session manager again. There's our agent. The session manager creates an agent pool. Typically it'll be one. If you want to scale up the multiple agent processes, then it'll be more of them. The agent pool has socket connections into the agent process. These can also be configured. Typically you want to have your connections equal to your sessions just so that you don't do any pipelining. For instance, if we set that connection pool just to one, even though we could have many sessions running in that agent, they'll all be going over a single connection and we'll all be pipelined in that session manager. But you have full control over that. When we start up the app server, we have a admin session thread that gets started in the agent. There'll be lots of cool things you can do with that in future versions of this product, but right now we use that in order to establish database connections and all. Through all the management stuff that happens. We got great hopes for that admin section. Also inside the admin section, we have our thread manager, we have our free session pool, and we have our free OS thread pool. When a request comes in, the ABO request manager will look to see if it's already a session it knows about or if it's a stateless session. And it'll grab a session from the free session pool and a thread from the OS pool and tell it to go do some work. The session thread, as I said before, it includes the shared resources such as self-service databases and what have you. And then we have our active ADL session pool for running your requests. So in our initial release, what is shared and what's not shared? Well, we're sharing our self-service database connections inside the agent process. Procedure libraries get shared. They'll get loaded once by that admin session and then parceled out to any sessions that are running our code from it. Our code will get shared. We have one agent process that'll use it all. Pro messages and OS threads also get shared. What doesn't get shared is pin tables and pro data sets. They're per session. Sockets, if you're doing anything going out using sockets or SOAP out or connecting to another app server, those aren't shared among all the sessions. Those are on a particular session. Network database connections, OBI, EDI files, and session memory. So one of the, actually, before we get into this, are there any questions on the overall architecture of the new Astor?
If you use one process kernel, so that one process kernel is processing multiple requests on the day.
Yes.
So that one process kernel is in some ways with each other.
So the question is, if the progress kernel can populate multiple sessions, then it must be multi-threaded, yes.
It's multi-threaded?
Yes, it is.
So why can't we have that in the 4GL?
So the question is, why can't we have that in the 4GL?
Each kernel is reused.
Oh, okay, yes. Right, okay, I see. Yeah. The agent itself is multi-threaded, but the session code itself is not multi-threaded. So, even though we run multiple sessions inside there, they're not.
Yeah.
Right. My answer to those, why isn't it in the language, because I'm not in the language team, so it's not up to me. But no, we're giving you the opportunity to run multiple sessions. The multi-threaded stuff is actually much more complicated. Yes?
Will the REST queue respect the same annotations that we have today?
Yeah, so the question is, will the REST adapter respect the same annotation you have today, or will that change? Everything's the same as far as your code goes, other than maybe some differences in like startup procedures and whatnot. The goal is to be able to take your existing application with a minimum of changes and get it running into the new architecture. Yes?
Two questions. One is, more efficient on resources, on human resources, previous architecture. Number two, it's a line drawn on Karen's diagram on the Node.js. What's the implications of that?
Okay, I was standing up here, so I didn't see the slide. But, I heard about the Node.js stuff, actually on Friday, but that's only because I was coming here. So I have no information on any of that. Yes. Oh, wait, your first question was, is it more efficient in resources? And yes, and I got a slide that shows that perfectly.
So now, supposing one of your sessions, none of your answers, you do something stupid.
Okay.
So you go into different groups or say what normally cons a progress kernel with all the math response.
Okay, so this is the kill minus nine question. Well, what do you do when you have a runaway process? Well, right now we're not gonna have runaway processes, we may have a runaway session, and we're gonna give you the tools in order to identify those sessions and to nuke it without having to kill the process. So your other sessions will continue running.
Normally what happens to the runaway session is
I don't think it's going to work that way.
You're going to have some sort of safeguard?
Yeah, we don't typically retry if something goes wrong in that case, just because, like you say, that can lead to bad things. Yeah. So, one of the obvious.
I assume the same source and probes output.
Yes.
Run by those app servers. Maybe a dumb question, but the existing app server will stay there for a while.
Yeah, so the question is, what happens to the legacy app server? It's not going away. It's, the way you guys upgrade to the latest versions, they're probably 5 years before. can they be installed permanently? Completely independent products. They can run on the same machine. They can talk to each other. It's, it's just another option for you. So yeah, nothing's gonna change with the original app server. It's still gonna be there for you. Yes.
How does WebSprint fit in this picture?
Okay, that was what I was expecting when I said what's missing from this picture is WebSpeed. WebSpeed will fit into this picture in a future release. At this point, though, we're heads down into this product, so I can't make any comments on where WebSpeed fits in that picture, other than that. We do have a mandate to figure out how it does. So one of the things that that Tomcat supports, and I never knew this until we started playing around with this new product, is something called instances. And with instances, It allows you to have a core Tomcat installation that that stays read-only, and you create app servers around it that take a subset of what's there, and it shares a bunch of common things. So so it allows you, for instance, you know, with a legacy app server, you create the different app servers. They would all be their own standalone thing. With instances, Tomcat instances, it allows you to, you know, define your different app servers, but they do share, they do run in their own JVM, but they do share all their code and whatnot with that core Tomcat, and it provides a lot of benefits, I'll be showing. So in server/passoe, you'll see our non-runnable template for creating instances. An instance can also be a unit deployment. That means if you have an application that's running under this architecture, you can create a zip file of that instance and install that into a system that has the core into it, and you just do some configuration and it'll pick up everything there. Instances live outside of DLC, such as Worker. I've heard for many years people both inside and outside the company complain about writing stuff inside DLC. Well, we got away with it. We got away from that to this product. And an instance lifetime can span multiple OE releases. When you upgrade OE, you can upgrade the core Tomcat or Pacific application server and still have your instance out there, and it'll pick up the new stuff, and I'll show that in a slide coming up. Finally, an instance could share web applications among different instances. So for instance, if you are creating a cluster, you can have all those instances use a common directory for their web application so that everyone is using the same set of bits. So when you create an instance, this is what lives in DLC. It's basically a Tomcat directory structure, and then we've added common live is the Tomcat shared loader, and that's where we include all our source code, so that it's shared per JVM and not per web app. We also have that extras directory, which includes the stuff we removed from Tomcat's default install, plus like the OE manager. In a graded instance, yes?
That's Tomcat 7.
Yes, Tomcat 7. When you create an instance, what we do is you give it a directory that you're going to create your instance, and we create this Tomcat directory structure there. We copy over some files. In the bin directory, we copy over some of the scripts that refer back into the core instance. For the configuration files, we do a full copy, and then we tailor those files because they'll be specific to that particular instance. And finally, we install the OEABL WAR web application as your root application in the web apps. Tomcat needs a root application. This is what will be the default when you create an instance. And what you do is you use the tcman command to create this. The ports, so it'll be the HTTP, HTTPS, and shutdown ports. You can give it an alias name, such as ASBroker1. Otherwise, it will use the target directory name that you give it as its name. So if we look at a Tomcat instance topology, Catalina Home is the Tomcat base, or the, they use Home and Base, but Base to me would mean the one that doesn't change. But they use Home for the one that doesn't change. And when you create your instance, you know, instance one, that could be ASBroker1, ASBroker2, what have you. They're all three instances. They could also be on different VMs and be part of an Apache cluster. That's one of the advantages we have by going to this Tomcat architecture, is that we open up the open edge world to all these third party tools and processes that have been well defined over the years on creating highly scalable web applications. So now comes time to deploy your application. You have a couple of options. The first is you can just create a WAR file and have your customer deploy that into an instance. Or, as I said, you can zip up a whole instance and create your own a zip file that includes you know, one or more WARF files along with anything else that's configured in that whole instance. The customer can then unzip that onto their system and using TCMAN register it with its home server. Upgrades also become much easier. So here we have four app servers with our initial version. We come out with version 1.1. Well, you can, on an instance-by-instance basis, you can just shut them down, use the TCMAN command to register them to a new Catalina home, and then start them back up. Once they're all restarted, pointing to the new Catalina home, you can then get rid of the old. You didn't have to change anything under the instance other than telling it where to where it's going to find Catalina home. Yes?
Speaking of installing an application, does it mean you're providing the Tomcat required configuration class, or does it include the Argo?
The question is, does it include the R code, or is it just the Tomcat stuff? And that depends on where your R code lives. If we go back to the directory structure here, if you go back to the directory structure here, if your work server where you keep your R code is normally outside of this, then it would be separate, and you might want to go, actually the instance may be. However, we do have a work directory inside this structure, and it's your choice. You can install your R code directly into this, which would mean that it would be part of your WAR file. Well, it wouldn't be part of your WAR file, but it would be part of the instance. WAR files would only be the stuff that lives in web apps, so if you're doing, if you want to create a single structure, then you would go with the instance and deploy your R code inside the worker there. And that's how you would set up your profiles.
So there's no way to get your R code in the WAR file?
No, because the WAR file, since it is ProPath, you could have your R code in the in the WAR file as long as your ProPath is set up correctly.
So that would be really neat.
So that is something I didn't think about, but it's definitely doable. You just probably put it under WebInf, right? So that is protected.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It needs to be protected.
Yeah, so then you can have your whole application with just a single WAR file. Okay, so configuration of log files. We have a number of property files that live in the conf directory. Most of these are in the Java format, which are just name value pairs. Openedge.properties, though, is our replacement for uBroker.properties, and if you open that up, you'll see what you're used to in Openedge.properties. For logging, For our app server, we have a single MS agent, or multiple processes, but a single progress kernel, if you want to call it, that will operate over that entire app server. So if you have multiple web applications, multiple OEADL WAR applications, because you have different URL spaces, they'll still use the same agent process. We don't have multiple agent processes per web application. They all share the same one. We'll probably be expanding that in the future, but for the initial release, it'll only be a single one. And typically, by default, that'll get installed as root. So the root agent log is the MS agent log. And then for the Java stuff, it'll be OEADL app, which is the application name, or root in the default case, along with the Dayton log. So your application deployment options. SOAP works just the same. You can take your old WISM files and deploy them into this. We have full support if you have a WISM file back from OpenEdge 9 or Progress 9. And 91D WSDK, we can even support that if you install that into here. REST, well, with REST, we did a little bit of a change in how we do things in that we normally create WAR files. However, underneath that is the equivalent of a WISM file, and that's a PAR file. In this application server, we don't we can support the rest of WAR file option, so you could install those, but typically it would be just installing the PAR files into that instance you created. And we do provide scripts in order to do this manually. Your ADLR code and libraries, it's all about ProPath. Doesn't work any different there. The OEADL Java web application is the WAR file that you can install. And you can create your own WAR file with all the pre-installed services, so REST services. And again, finally, we talked about the zipping up an entire instance. So before we get on to performance scalability, are there any other questions on the architecture?
Can we use something like Catalina Home as a variable in your ProPath?
So the question is, can you use Catalina Home as a variable in your ProPath? Yes, actually. If you look in that OpenEdShot properties file, we do have some variable substitution parameters. So for instance, you could use, I've been using Catalina Base myself, which is the instance stuff, but you can use those substitution parameters in setting up ProPath. Any other questions? Yes?
When OpenHP GET was introduced a couple years ago, there was also the solution of a single app server that runs EDM and EDM processors. Is this still part?
I don't know.
So it's not in the scope.
It's not in the scope of this project at all. Theoretically, I mean, you could.
Right. What was the question again? Sorry.
Well, when OpenMesh PPM was introduced, there was already such a version of a single app server that runs ABL and BPM processes. Whether that fits in this scope or not, or never, maybe eventually.
Maybe.
I mean, the big problem with BPM is that it's a full-fledged GJB application.
Yeah.
So it requires, you know, it requires JBoss and not Tomcat. You know. So it's real heavyweight process, and if we get it down so that I can run in Tomcat, that'd be great. So performance and scalability. So what I'm going to show you here is a test we've done. It's the ATM test. People probably are all familiar with it. It's one that gets shown a lot. It simulates ATM banking transactions. It's a highly intensive database update application. This type of application is very well suited for this new architecture. So if you're doing RESTful type of applications that are passing megabytes of data sets back and forth, you're not going to see as much of an improvement as here. This is small payloads with high database access looking to do as many transactions per second. Okay, the machine we ran it on was running Red Hat Linux. We find that Linux definitely is the most performant of our Unixes. I was running with 8 CPUs and 6 gigabytes of RAM. Now for the classic app server, we run both stateless and stateful, but we didn't want to create any queuing. So when we're running the classic app server, the number of clients equal the number of agent processes. Whereas with PassOE, we ran this with just a single agent process, period, regardless of the number of clients we have. So here are the numbers. The numbers in orange are the legacy app server, and the numbers in green are the new one. Again, this is just the ATM test, but it shows you how much more efficient we are. The legacy app server, pretty much, whether it's clients or whether it's state aware or stateless, was topped out at about 200 transactions per second. If we improved the specs of the machine, we could probably get that up there, but that machine was resource bound in some fashion, either memory or process or whatnot. With the new app server, we see improvements from 5 to 7 times in the number of transactions per second we can operate. And the other thing that you'll notice is that that regardless of whether we're stateless or state aware, 5 to 7 times. Whether we're stateless or state aware, adding more clients actually increased the amount of transactions that we can process. So we're not resource bound at all in this particular test. Again, depending on your application, your mileage will vary, but this ATM test is very well suited if you're doing high transaction processing type of stuff. You're going to love this test. So in the coming months, we're going to be offering early access to this, this product. And if you are interested, just contact Rob Straight, and he'll get you on the list. We plan on having something out definitely before exchange, because we're going to be talking about this a lot during exchange, hopefully. My last slide is just a splash screen slide. I'll leave this up in case you want to take down that information. And I'm open for any other questions that you may have. Yes?
Do you have an idea when web speed might be part of the equation that you're working on?
Right, so the question was, when will web speed be part of this particular architecture? If I can only go by what they say on the roadmaps. I can't. If it's not on the roadmap, then they're not telling anybody that yet. Any other questions? Yes?
I'm curious. Obviously, you built the bridge from Java to products, but from JNI to products.
No, not at all. We are not using JNI for this. We are. It's the same architecture that we have with the legacy app server. We're just much more efficient in our agent process. It's still using a socket, you know, localhost connection to communicate between the processes. Yeah, it's not a Java bridge like the .NET bridge. Every time we've gone down that road, it's just been, well, it's...
Just
say not successful.
Something that I couldn't do was, for instance, context management in a super procedure, because the next answer report may not be evaluated in the same session.
Right.
So in this case, can I assume that even in my architecture stages, that all of my answer reports will be handled by the same process?
So the question is, if you're stateless, will your app server calls be handled by the same session? No, because you're stateless.
So you still cannot use the super procedure for
I'm not sure how that whole super procedure stacks up.
Well, we're much more efficient, okay, and you can refer to like a real estate aware. Mm-hmm. The old state aware, you say penalty because there is a lot of mapping between client and OS process. Very different.
Yes, okay.
Here you have one client and one ABM session, but that agent process can have hundreds and hundreds of those sessions simultaneously. So you can actually revert back your application back to a stateful context model like that, and then you're guaranteed we perform a sticky session. So you're always guaranteed to be delivered back to the same session context.
Right.
Also, the drawback of being saved there is that, you know, one of the clients uses up one session. So
that's not true here.
Well, that's not true here.
Well,
so from a licensing model, I can choose state aware. For chain price, I'm trying to do stateless with the old ones.
You're going to have to talk to somebody else higher on the food chain than me as you talk about pricing.
Yeah, last instant and packaging is not yet in the picture.
So follow my question.
Yes.
Straight aware side. Are you doing some sort of dehydration thing on the...
Actually, yeah, that's something that... You triggered my thought that I didn't mention. All our sessions are state aware, even if you're stateless. So if you do run super procedures in a stateless configuration, you don't remove those super procedures. So they'll be around in the free session pool for use by other sessions. They won't have that client context. It's not applicable for client context sort of things. But those sessions are state aware, so anything you've run when they get created, will still be in memory unless you read them. Yes?
Can you say the new app server might be available by you?
No, I did not say anything about availability. I said early access.
What is that? Is that just for
development? That means, yeah, that means you download it, play with it, and you tell us. Because we're always amazed by the things you guys can do with our products. That we're sure that we're going to say, man, we didn't think of that, and they're going to use it this way, so we need to fix that bug. Any other questions?
Yes. I guess in this thing, is there going to be such a thing as a first-class SQL engine?
First-class SQL engine? Yeah. It's the same as the current agent.
It's the old one.
Yeah, yeah, right, correct. It's nothing's changed as far as the ABL, ABM goes. Just the way that we manage it. Yes?
You were talking about the startup procedure. Okay. There's a startup procedure for the session as opposed to the agents that run it. What goes into that sessions? Am I right? So the startup for the session. What goes into that procedure? If stuff is running, the session is available to all the agents that are.
That's the TC. That's if you.
Start with one agent.
Yeah, right.
It's one agent.
So we do have the process startup.
Many sessions.
So my terminology is back.
It's important to have the term. Yeah. Yes, that's
an
why
agent
right.
Startup.
Yes.
Procedure.
That you can use to connect the database, and so the database connections will be shared with all sessions.
Okay, what if I run sewer procedures? Are they available to all the
sessions? On the session start.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And you could have the three parameters are the number of concurrent requests, which you can have executing, the number of total sessions, which are basically places you can have state, and I guess the third one is the number of threads that are executing. So you can adjust those any way you want.
Okay.
And so
question just raised a red flag for me. Not your question per se, but the topic. Startup procedure.
Right.
It's 2014, maybe 2015 when this will be released. Might be startup class. It's a main method or something like that.
We ran out of hands to make classes.
We make the classes, you just need to call them.
Well, yeah. Well, basically, you have your startup procedure that instantiates the class and calls
it, right? I was thinking just about you, Mike, when I added into the list.
You want more to see us talk to Julie Lennon Smith?
I failed you.
We're going to get into some concepts about load balancing or auto scaling.
Okay, so the question is there any concept of load balancing or auto scaling? That's one of the reasons why we went to Tomcat. Apache and all the tools that are surrounding that whole load balancing and scaling and clustering. We want to take advantage of those things instead of having to write something ourselves. They're well tested, they've been out there, they work. So by sticking an Apache HDD server in front of it, you can create a cluster. The name server, one thing you notice there's no name server involved in any of this. So we don't use that. You're going to basically be doing that stuff on top of our stuff.
We need more load balance testing velocity.
Yes.
We have a web service deployed on a front-end server, which is Tomcat. So you're saying that this will now talk to another Tomcat.
Doesn't have to. You could deploy directly into that Tomcat instance.
We don't want to.
Yeah. Well, it depends on it. Right. But we're not running an admin server in there. I don't know if there's any benefit of.
The security setting on this was made so that it could go into the other security zone and be an internet qualified server.
Yes. Because we don't offer a native connector, So you're using an HTTP URL to get to the Tomcat server. So there is no notion of names at that point. If we do add in the legacy support for that, then we would have to, you know, obviously do something along those lines. But as far as that goes, that's all handled on top of us. You're just using a URL. If you're going into Apache and cluster, it'll do the load balancing or routing for you. Yes, right. That was our hope. Yes. Any other questions? Okay, I'd like to thank you all for coming.